I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
My name is Feroz Sidhu. I'm a trauma surgeon in California. I worked in Gaza European Hospital in March and April. The attack on northern Gaza especially is intensifying, and it's possibly entering a new phase that's very dangerous.
As the Gaza death toll rises, we'll speak with a California surgeon who wrote a devastating op-ed in the New York Times headlined, 65 doctors, nurses, and paramedics, what we saw in Gaza. Then, less than 3 weeks from the election, Kamala Harris is campaigning in Michigan. Will she lose votes over the Biden administration's support for Israel's war on Gaza and its expanding war on Lebanon? We'll speak with Abbas Alawia, who co-founded the Uncommitted Movement.
The position that we're representing is widely popular among Democrats. We need to stop sending weapons that kill civilians. That's how we achieve a ceasefire. Those are the demands of our movement.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump will take questions from Latinx voters at a town hall meeting in Miami. We'll look at how Harris and Trump are ramping up efforts to appeal to this major voting bloc in battleground states. Are some in the Latinx community moving to the right? All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Oxfam and over 35 other humanitarian groups have issued a dire warning about Israel's siege on northern Gaza. In a statement, the group said, quote, the Israeli forces' assault on Gaza has escalated to a horrifying level of atrocity. Northern Gaza is being wiped off the map, they wrote. Israel's barred all food into the area while attacks on displaced people continue. Meanwhile, the Biden administration sent Israel a written warning that the U.S. may cut off military assistance if Israel does not boost humanitarian aid access to Gaza within the next 30 days. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin wrote, quote, we're now writing to underscore the U.S. government's deep concern over the deteriorating humanitarian situation in Gaza and seek urgent and sustained actions by your government this month to reverse this trajectory, unquote. The Biden administration has continued to arm Israel despite findings by its own experts at USAID and the State Department that Israel's routinely impeded delivery of food and medicine to Gaza in violation of U.S. law. On Tuesday, State Department spokesperson Matt Miller faced numerous questions about U.S. policy. This is Reuters journalist Humaira Pamuk.
Given you are already saying humanitarian assistance is very low and putting in front of Israel a bunch of concrete measures on how to improve it, why are you waiting for another 30 days to implement the law?
Because we believe it's appropriate to give them a chance to cure the problem.
Other outlets have reported, but Reuters has reported all the way back in April, that officials from this department have assessed in internal memos that Israel, quote, is persistently and arbitrarily impeding aid in Gaza. So if the law is already being, if it's already doing it, why is the United States waiting?
So first of all, that is not, so we've been over this before, I know, from this podium. There are people that reach that conclusion, and there are people inside this building who reach the opposite conclusion. So I think it's important to state that for the record.
In Lebanon, Israel attacked a municipal building in the southern town of Nabatea, killing six people, including the town's mayor. The BBC reports the mayor and other city workers were killed while holding a meeting to discuss coordinating aid for civilians remaining in the area. Israel also bombed the village of Qana, striking a healthcare center and several homes, killing at least 15 people. Israel also bombed the southern suburbs of Beirut just hours after the U.S. State Department said it opposes the, quote, scope and nature of Israel's attacks on Beirut. As Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu dismisses calls for a ceasefire, the UN Refugee Agency is warning a quarter of Lebanon is now under forced evacuation orders from Israel.
Israeli airstrikes and Israeli evacuation orders continue to increase the areas impacted. So now that we have over 25% of the country under a direct Israeli military evacuation order. Just yesterday, we had another 20 villages issued with an evacuation order in the south of the country.
In Georgia, more than 325,000 voters cast ballots Tuesday on the first day of early voting here in the United States. That's more than twice the previous record set 4 years ago. Meanwhile, a Georgia judge has blocked a controversial new rule set by the Georgia State Election Board that would have required election workers to hand count the number of ballots cast in each precinct on Election Day. More questions are being raised about Trump's mental state after a town hall event in Pennsylvania took an unexpected turn Monday when two audience members fainted. Trump ended up taking just 5 questions from the crowd before making this announcement.
Let's not do any more questions. Let's just listen to music. Let's make it into a music. Who the hell wants to hear questions, right?
For the next more than 30 minutes, Trump's staff played music while the former president swayed and bopped to the music on stage, along with South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who was hosting the town hall. Trump eventually left the stage without taking any more questions. On Tuesday, Kamala Harris responded to Trump's town hall by writing online, quote, "Hope he's okay." On Tuesday, Trump appeared at the Economic Club of Chicago, where he was grilled about reports that his economic proposals could devastate the U.S. economy. He was asked by Bloomberg editor-in-chief John Micklethwaite, who cited a recent study by the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget.
If you add up all the promises you've made, and your plans would add $7.5 trillion to the debt, that's more than twice the total for Vice President Harris. You're on course to push up debt up to 150% of GDP. You know, this is a very business-like audience.
Yeah.
Why should they trust you with that?
Because we're about growth. She's got no growth whatsoever, and we're all about growth.
In other election news, newly disclosed federal filings show multi-billionaire Elon Musk has officially become one of Donald Trump's biggest financial backers. Musk gave around $75 million to his pro-Trump super PAC in the last quarter. Meanwhile, Miriam Adelson, the billionaire wife of the late casino magnate Sheldon Adelson, gave $95 million to her pro-Trump super PAC. Earlier this year, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported Miriam Adelson is pushing Trump to support Israel annexing the entire occupied West Bank. On Tuesday, the popular radio host Charlemagne the God interviewed Kamala Harris in Detroit in what was billed as an audio town hall. During the event, Harris agreed that Trump's vision for the country could be described as fascism.
The other Donald Trump is about taking us backward.
The other is about fascism. Why can't we just say it?
The World Food Program's warning millions of people in southern Africa are facing the region's worst food crisis in decades due to a devastating drought. 5 countries, Lesotho, Malawi, Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, have already declared national disasters. The World Food Program said Tuesday the drought could deepen into a full-scale humanitarian crisis.
A historic drought, the worst food crisis yet, has devastated more than 27 million lives across the region. Some 21 million children in southern Africa are malnourished. For many communities, this is the worst food crisis in decades.
North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper says 92 people are still missing in the state after Hurricane Helene devastated the city of Asheville and other mountain communities over 2 weeks ago. The storm's death toll stands at around 250 across six states. The number of migrants dying in New Mexico near the U.S.-Mexico border has increased tenfold over the past 5 years. Over 220 bodies have been found since January of last year. Many of the victims are believed to have died from dehydration and malnutrition as they attempt to cross scorching hot desert or mountain areas to seek refuge in the United States. Google's announced plans to build seven nuclear reactors in the United States to help power the company's data centers and artificial intelligence systems. The announcement comes just a month after Microsoft said it would fund the reopening of the Three Mile Island nuclear plant, the site of the worst nuclear disaster in U.S. history. And music mogul Sean Diddy Combs is facing six new rape and sexual assault lawsuits. Combs has been jailed since mid-September after pleading not guilty to federal racketeering, conspiracy, sex trafficking and other charges. The attorney Tony Busby has said is representing more than 120 people who have made sexual assault and rape allegations against Combs, who was once one of the most powerful figures in the entertainment world. Meanwhile, the Los Angeles Times reveals new details about how Combs attacked a UCLA football coach and choked an intern in the coach's office in 2015 in a dispute over how the coach treated Combs' son. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
As the official death toll in Gaza passes more than 42,400, the true number may be impossible to know until Israel's war is over. But medical workers who witnessed the carnage in Gaza's hospitals are speaking out. We begin today's show with a surgeon who volunteered at the European Hospital in Khan Yunis and wrote a devastating opinion piece in The New York Times, headlined 65 Doctors, Nurses, and Paramedics, What We Saw in Gaza. In a minute, we'll be joined by Dr. Feroz Sidwa, who begins the piece writing, quote, I worked as a trauma surgeon in Gaza from March 25th to April 8th. I volunteered in Ukraine and Haiti. I grew up in Flint, Michigan. I've seen violence and worked in conflict zones. But of the many things that stood out about working in a hospital in Gaza, one got to be. Nearly every day I was there, I saw a new young child who'd been shot in the head or the chest, virtually all of whom went on to die, 13 in total. At the time, I assumed this had to be the work of a particularly sadistic soldier located nearby. But after returning home, I met an emergency medicine physician who'd worked in a different hospital in Gaza 2 months before me. I couldn't believe the number of kids I saw shot in the head, I told him. To my surprise, he responded, yeah, me too, every single day, he said. The piece quotes dozens of healthcare workers and includes three X-rays or CT scans of pediatric patients who were shot in the head or the left side of the chest. The person who provided the scans was Dr. Mimi Saed, who works in Khan Yunis from August 8th to September 5th, and said the children usually arrived at the hospital either dead or in critical condition after suffering a single shot. On Tuesday, the New York Times opinion section editor issued a statement refuting claims circulating online that the images were altered, saying the editors had, quote, photographs to corroborate the CT scan images, but, quote, because of their graphic nature, we decided these photos of children with gunshot wounds to the head or neck were too horrific for publication. For more, we're joined by Dr. Feroz Sidwa, the trauma and general surgeon who wrote this piece. He also spearheaded an open letter to President Biden and Vice President Harris, signed by 99 U.S. medical professionals who served in Gaza, testifying to the unprecedented scale of the healthcare catastrophe and calling for an immediate ceasefire and the end to all U.S. support for Israel. We are also joined in Chicago by Raja Musleh, the country representative in Gaza of Med Global, a medical humanitarian aid group. She previously worked as a nurse at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Dr. Feroz Sidwell, let's begin with you. Thank you for joining us in the studio. We heard from you in Gaza and spoke to you right when you came out. This is very significant, this New York Times op-ed. First that the Times agreed to run it, and then the controversy around it, what they published and what they didn't publish. Tell us the story.
Yeah, the Times piece was interesting. Actually, the opinion section reached out, the visual opinion team reached out to me and asked me to write the piece. So we came up with the idea together, and that was after we wrote an open letter. Like you mentioned, we wrote one in October, but we also wrote one in July to the Biden administration. That was when the Times reached out to me and said, can we get information about exactly who wrote or who saw what in Gaza? So we did. We designed a poll. I got everybody to answer it that I could, and we went on from there. The controversy that you mentioned about the images is just manufactured nonsense. It's got no connection to reality whatsoever. These pictures are, there's no reason to doubt them at all. Furthermore, I've seen the full CT scans. I've seen the photos of the actual wounds on the children. It's not surprising. These were common injuries in Gaza. I mean, like, almost everybody saw the same thing. Everybody saw kids get shot in the head. Almost everybody saw severely malnourished children. It seems like the piece has had an effect. It seems like it's making its way around, and people are seeing it, and they're kind of horrified by what they see, which they should be.
And then talk about the whole issue of whether to show the dead or dying children and their injuries.
Yeah, in the piece as I wrote it, that was never part of the plan, I guess you would say. But after once this nonsense about people saying the images are faked came out, the New York Times, I guess they, and I wasn't involved in that decision at all, but they had to decide whether or not to put, the picture they're talking about. She's probably a 4 or 5 year old girl. Her eyes are closed. She has a breathing tube down, and she has a bullet wound right here. There's some brain matter that you can see on her hair. I'm a trauma surgeon, so I'm used to seeing things like that, but I can understand what they mean when they say that they're too horrific to publish. I personally wish that Americans could see more of what it looks like when a child is shot in the head, when a child is filleted open by bombs. I think it would make us think a little bit more about what we do in the world.
Did the Times also do a news piece on this, given the level of the video, of the scans you had, the pictures you had?
Yeah, we collected a lot of documentary evidence from people who are from healthcare workers who'd been in Gaza quite a bit, all of them have quite a bit more. Everyone takes a lot of photographs and videos and things like that when they're there, and they're all date and location stamped. They're not faked. I don't know if the Times news section has reached out to other people because their names are mostly public. I don't know if they've reached out to them or not for specific comment about specific things. I have been contacted by, I don't think I'm exaggerating if I say dozens of journalists since coming back from Gaza, news journalists, saying that we want to publish about the children being shot in the head, the extent of malnutrition, small infants dying of malnutrition and dehydration. And they all say that they need a way of just kind of overwhelming their editor's skepticism. They need a humongous mass of evidence. So, like, I probably shouldn't name them, but I know editor, or I know journalists at the Post, at the Times, at BBC, the Washington Post, yes, who've been working on such stories for months, but still not out, despite having
What is the implication of so many children being shot in the head, when you would assume that if children are, as the Israelis claim, unfortunate collateral damage of their bombing attempts to kill militants in Gaza? What does this mean to you that so many children have been found to be shot in the head?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, excuse me. So, you know, as physicians and nurses, we can't say that this particular child or that particular child was shot on purpose or by Israel or somebody else. That's not what we can possibly do. We're not war crimes investigators. But I think it's pretty clear that when there's a pattern of in the catchment area of every hospital in Gaza, every time any international has been around for an entire year on a daily basis, a child has been shot in the head in a place of 2 million people. It seems unlikely to me that that's an accident. You know, if you look at the differential of killing between Ukraine and Israel, it depends on what day you calculate it, but the differential is literally hundreds of times. The rate of killing of children in Gaza is hundreds of times higher than it is in Ukraine. So it's very hard for me to believe that this is just a byproduct of a war that's being fought in otherwise just ways. I find that hard to believe.
And you mentioned other battles and other wars. Your experience in those other war zones. What is the difference from what you see, aside from the children being shot in the head? Other specific differences between what's happening in Gaza and what you've seen in other places?
Well, there's a few. One is the massive level of destruction. Not only have the hospitals been attacked, the universities, it's getting down to the level of destroying the water, sanitation, and hygiene infrastructure, and concentrating an entire population on the Mawasi, in the Mawasi area, which is basically just the beach of Gaza. Oxfam wrote a report where they estimated that when there were 500,000 people in the Mawasi area, there was one toilet for every 4,130 people there. That's just totally outrageous. I mean, those numbers don't exist anywhere else on the planet. Now there might be a million. Nobody really knows how many people have been pushed to the Mawasi. But these are just totally outrageous numbers. So you have a largely child population. Gaza's very young. It's been incredibly concentrated. It's been starved for a year. And the winter rains are coming, which are going to lift, you know, all the sewage and everything up out of the ground. Every sewage plant has been destroyed. 90% of the water, sanitation, and hygiene infrastructure has been destroyed. And the healthcare system has been destroyed. So, yeah, that's pretty unique in my experience.
Yeah, and I also wanted to ask you, you recently were supposed to speak at Columbia Medical School, but your event was canceled at the last minute. Could you talk about what happened?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it my event just because I wasn't the organizer. But I was invited with Adam Hamawi, who is an American veteran and a plastic and reconstructive surgeon, and Dr. Mark Perlmutter, who is a orthopedic and hand surgeon, a Jewish American. I think he's been on Democracy Now. But he's definitely been on Democracy Now before. And Lana, whose last name I just can't pronounce, who is a surgical nurse who also was working in Gaza, and she was actually one of the first internationals to go into Gaza. We had a medical talk planned. It was a technical exercise in surgical and medical care in an extremely difficult setting. It wasn't a political talk, but the organizers were smart. They recognized that it was very likely to be canceled at the last minute. It was canceled as we walked in the building, from what I can tell. And so they had organized a bookstore down the street to be available, so smart on their part. It's not surprising, but I think it's pretty shameful, to be perfectly honest.
I wanted to bring in addition to Dr. Feroz Sidwa, Raja Musla, who is the country representative in Gaza of the medical humanitarian aid group Med Global. Earlier this year, she worked as a nurse at El Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. She's currently joining us from Chicago. Raja, thank you so much for being with us. You sheltered El Shifa, and of course, the head of El Shifa Hospital was arrested by the Israeli military. Can you describe what the situation was like then when you were there, and what you understand as you deal with Gaza every day, even as a nurse in Chicago, is happening now and what you're calling for?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Sorry, actually, I have trapped at Shifa Hospital for more than 40 days. And what I'm witnesses in this period, actually, I can describe it as crimes, because we receive at the hospital a huge number of injured persons coming to the emergency department. And the majority of the cases, unfortunately, women and children. And the massive of the injured for these cases was severe. It is the first time of my whole life I witness this kind of injury. Many people or many children come without legs, without arms, and even I'm witness a father like hold his children in two bags. This is the first time of my life I'm witness the severity of the pumping that using during this war. The situation on Shifa Hospital was really very critical and very, very bad. There's no access to food because there's more than 80,000 IDPs inside the Shifa Hospital. There's no electricity. They cut the electricity, they cut the water. And, you know, the situation was very bad. One of the cases that I will never, ever forget it, for a girl, her age is 10 years. She was completely burned. 9% of her body was burned. And she asked me to stay beside her and hold her hand. Until the moment, I will never, ever forget her burned skin at my hands. Until the moment I feel that. Until the moment I feel guilty because I did not obey or stay beside her in the bed because she requested that and I did not do that. Until the moment I feel guilty when she asked me about her mother and father and sister, brothers, and I cannot respond to her request because the whole family has been killed during bombing her house. I will never forget the dogs were eaten, the dead body inside Shifa Hospital at front of the emergency department. This will be stuck on my mind for the whole life. I will never, ever forget a boy. After the operation, his leg has been amputated, and he asked me to move his leg. What I should respond for a kid, his age is 9 years, when he asked me, just move my leg. I pretend that I move his leg and I ask him, is that okay? He said, yes. In this moment, I feel like my heart is broken because the suffering of my people inside Shifa Hospital and in the whole Gaza Strip. Now the situation on the ground, I'm receive calls from my colleague from the north of Gaza. There's no access to food, no access to water, no access to fuel for the hospitals to operate the centers or to operate the hospitals here in North Gaza. The situation is very, very critical. I'm here in Chicago just to send my people message. We need ceasefire now. We need ceasefire now. Enough is enough. More than 1 year and the people inside Gaza suffering from and taste many types of death. Enough is enough. 365 days and the people inside Gaza taste all kind of death. I'm witness the horrible of this war. I'm witness 4 wars before, and this war is completely different. The death everywhere, the suffering everywhere, The people just eat one time. They save the food for the children, and the children suffering from malnutrition inside Gaza. My message for the whole world, we are a human being. We are not numbers. We have the right to receive health care inside Gaza. We have the right to rise up our children. We have the right to return back our lives, our dignity. We have the right to rebuild our universities, our schools. We are a human being, and we are not numbers.
And Raja Musa, I wanted to ask you the interactions you had, if any, with the Israeli soldiers. How did they treat the medical personnel?